With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And in particular, I want to welcome our two latest Patreon supporters at the rookie level of $2 or more per month. Welcome to Nolan and Laura. Thank you so much for your support. You can become one of our ongoing Patreon supporters at patreon.greatdetectives.net. And you can also send along a one-time donation to support.greatdetectives.net. Or you can also donate via the Zelle app to box13 at greatdetectives.net. You can also mail in a donation to Adam Graham, P.O. Box 15913, Boise, Idaho 83715. Well, now we're going to go ahead and take a listen to Rocky Jordan. Really a unique detective series in that it is set in Egypt. As cafe owner Rocky Jordan gets drawn repeatedly into webs of intrigue and mystery. The series had more authenticity than you would often expect of a foreign location, with some research being done, much of it coming out of the Army's pocket manual to Egypt, pocket guide to Egypt. The series stars Jack Moyles, who we have heard a lot, but usually in a supporting role. In fact, it'd be safe to say that outside of Rocky Jordan and another series, Douglas of the World, which is a bit more obscure, his work really was just character work, except for this success of a series where he played the leading role in Rocky Jordan for a couple years, and even before that. But we'll talk about that a bit after today's episode. So let's go ahead and get into the first episode of Rocky Jordan. The original air date, October 31st, 1948, and this one is The Bartered Bridegroom.
Time now for Rocky Jordan.
It was a hot afternoon in Cairo when she walked into the Cafe Tambourine. She was beautiful, but there was something else. Something so wrong with the picture that I couldn't take my eyes off her. It wasn't the blonde hair piled on top of her head, or the dress that clung to her like a football player covering a fumble, nor even the set expression on her face. But when she stopped in front of me, I knew what it was. She was all woman, but not an inch under 6'4".
Again, we bring you a story of adventure with a man named Rocky Jordan, proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine in Cairo. Cairo, gateway to the ancient East, where modern life unfolds against the backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
We've had a pretty fair assortment of customers in the tambourine. Almost anything on feet. But when I looked up into that icy-faced 6'4" blonde female, I knew we had our first Amazon.
You're ready, Mr. Jordan?
Ready?
You're wasting time, Jordan.
I didn't catch the name.
Lily Karoff. You're being rude.
The face is familiar. Maybe we met in Istanbul.
No, Jordan.
Alexandria, maybe?
The arrangements are made. You're stalling.
Look, suppose we take it from the top of the page, Miss Karoff.
Naturally, you're interested in the money. This, too, has been taken care of. Now about the ceremony.
Ceremony?
The wedding. Be there in an hour.
Oh, sure. I'll be there in plenty of time. I'm a great believer in weddings. Well, by the way, who's getting married?
I am, Mr. Jordan. To you.
Maybe we'd better go into my office.
That will not be necessary. Timmy Rogers has made all the arrangements.
Timmy Rogers? Now I know we'd better go into the office. She sat across the desk from me and lit a king-sized cigarette. The hand that held the match wore a queen-sized diamond. It sent a reflection against the wall. I didn't like the way the reflection quivered. Her face was under control, but her hands gave her away. She was a nervous bride.
Timmy should have explained these details.
If I know Timmy Rogers, he doesn't bother with details.
That's unfortunate. Nevertheless, in 1 hour, you and I shall be married. You will receive $5,000. Is that clear?
Oh, very.
It is not enough money?
Oh, it's not entirely it, Miss Karoff. Having never been married before...
You're being rude again. I plan to leave Cairo immediately after the ceremony.
Really? Tell me, Miss Karoff, where are we going on our honeymoon?
Enough, Jordan. I will not be insulted further. You will receive the $5,000 as soon as I have sold my interest in the Club Fichard.
Fichard? Oh, yeah. Now I remember you and Mike Sloan bought that together recently.
Yes, but I am selling my interest.
What's the matter? Business falling off?
No, not business. You see, I'm a white Russian. Certain of my friends have been disappearing lately. I do not wish the same thing to happen to me.
I see.
But this is not what I came to talk about. Now, the wedding...
Look, Lily, I've got news for you. I'm not in the mood for marriage.
Your moods do not interest me, Jordan. You are going to marry me.
And I'll admit you're more persuasive with a gun.
You will not refuse me.
Maybe it didn't occur to you, Lil, but you can't marry a dead man. Come on, put the gun away.
There are many other ways to make certain you do not back out. Jordan, be at my club in 1 hour. It means your life.
She moved out of the office as silently as an Arab folding his tent. I followed her out in time to see her climb into a black sedan 2 feet shorter than the Queen Mary. It faded off into the crowded street. I stood there trying to figure out where I could rent a tux cheap when a hand thumped against my back. I turned to see a watered-down version of Tyrone Power, all of 5'5" in his elevated shoes. It was none other than the little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky, old kid, I just saw her leaving. Congratulations, kid.
This makes my day complete.
I'm so happy for you, kid. You'll make a lovely bridegroom.
Slow down, kid. You're drooling on my wedding suit.
What a woman. You're a picker, Jordan, if I ever saw one.
Aren't you forgetting one little item? You picked her, not me.
A mere formality. Greatest girl this side of Minsk.
Well, at least the biggest.
But Rock, kid, for $2,000, how can you miss?
It's even less interesting for
$2,000. Huh? How's that, Rock?
Lily offered me $5,000.
Well, what do you know? She really must be scared.
Okay, suppose you give me the straight story.
Well, Rock, I'll tell you.
Still listening?
Well, look, why don't you and I go into the bar for a drink, Rock, and I'll tell you all about it.
I followed the little man into the bar. We pulled up in a couple of empty stools by the open front door. Timmy Rogers rubbed his hands, licked his lips, and ordered a double orange blossom.
Orange blossom for a wedding day, huh, Rock? Now, where was I?
You and Lily Karloff, remember?
Yeah. Well, sir, Rock, it's like this. Lil has a few roulette wheels out in the back room of her joint, as you know.
Hmm.
The other night, I ran into as tough a streak of luck as has been seen in Cairo since Happy Harper was picked up for trying to sell some tourists the Sphinx.
How much?
I dropped $5,000, which it just so happens I couldn't cover at the bank.
Mm-hmm. So then came Lily.
Yeah. Lily made me a proposition. She'll forget the $5,000 if I marry her.
Sure.
But it turns out she's looking for an American. She wants a ticket to the USA.
Oh, that pitch, huh?
Well, can't say that I blame her, Rock. Things can get pretty rough around Cairo for the wrong...
Hey, hold it.
Huh?
That guy's been staring at me too long. Standing there in the open doorway was a brown suit full of balloon-shaped Egyptian. His eyes didn't leave my face as he hooked his cane over one arm and smoothed his white gloves with his hand. He tipped the brown bowler on his fat head and waddled toward me.
You are Mr. Rocky Jordan?
Yeah?
I am Mahmoud Pasha. My card.
What's on your mind?
I will not waste time. Mr. Jordan, regarding your coming marriage to Miss Lily Karloff.
Oh, I suppose you're the bride's father.
Indeed, I am not. My affection for Miss Karloff is not paternal. I have come to offer you $10,000 if you do not go through with this wedding.
Ten? It's the best offer I've had all day.
In cash, Mr. Jordan.
If it makes you feel any better, Pasha, you can forget... I hit the floor fast. Over my head, the big mirror behind the bar shattered and rained glass. When the rain stopped, I jumped up and raced for the door. Outside, there was a dent in the usual late afternoon traffic, and down the street shot a black sedan. It was the same car Lily Karloff had stepped into 15 minutes ago. Well, that gave me something to think about as I walked back into my cafe to survey the damage. The man in the brown bowler had vanished. Underneath a table, his broken cocktail glass in his hand, was Timmy Rogers. I helped him to his feet. All right, little man, fit that into your patch story.
I had nothing to do with it, Rocky, so help me.
You'll have to do better than that.
Rock, listen. I didn't know Lily would go that far.
Wasn't Lily. She may be in a hurry for a wedding, but she doesn't want to marry a corpse.
Well, maybe she was only trying to scare you, Rock.
Could be, but I don't like her idea of a wedding invitation. Well, let's go.
What are you going to do, Rocky?
I'm going to pay my respects to the bride. It started with an Amazon looking for a husband, and then a two-bit gambler with a sense of humor. Then in comes a fat man in a brown bowler who wants to pay for no wedding at all. Rocky Jordan, bartered bridegroom. I shoved Timmy Rogers into a cab and hopped in behind him. I gave the cabbie the address, Club Fashad. 10 minutes later, we pulled up in front of a big streamlined white building. I paid the driver and we got out. The sign on the door said not open until 7 o'clock. Sometimes you can't believe in signs. Coming down the corridor was a slim, tux character named Mike Sloan, manager and co-owner of the Club Fashad. A nasty smile cracked his face. Oh, I'd seen Sloan kicking around Cairo before, and I didn't like him. I like him even less now.
Well, Rocky Jordan, congratulations.
Listen, Sloan, I didn't come here for...
Now, don't bother to explain, Jordan. I understand. You got our wedding invitation?
Oh, sure. The bride wore a 38.
Lily is sometimes a little impulsive, Jordan. After all, no one was hurt.
But you'll get a bill for that mirror.
We're ready for the wedding. You're wasting time.
It's off, Sloan. Couldn't find the right size wedding cake.
Rogers, what about that? I thought Jordan was all lined up.
I did my best, Mike.
You're not backing out of it now, Jordan. Let's go. The bride's waiting.
Pack her in ice. She'll keep. I'm out of it.
Too easy, Jordan. Not a chance.
Just watch me.
Rocky, listen. You're making a mistake.
You sure are, Jordan.
Oh, I see. It's going to be one of those shotgun affairs, huh?
Well, I wouldn't want to have to kill you. This way, Jordan.
The gun in Mike Sloan's hand didn't move. It buried itself into the middle of my spine. Timmy Rogers wrung his hands and trailed along behind us. Sloan walked me down a thick carpeted corridor, and we turned left into the main office of the Club for Shad. The blinds were drawn. Sloan slammed the door behind us. Coming toward me from the other side of the room was Lily Karoff, with gold earrings swinging like pendants. She was poured into a glaring red dress that revealed an awful lot of the new look.
Well, Jordan, I see you couldn't pass up the money.
Tell your boy Sloan to get the gun out of my back, and I'll show you how fast I can pass it up.
Mike, is everything prepared?
Ready and waiting, Lily. In fact...
Lily, my flower. Lily, what's happening?
It was the balloon-shaped Egyptian in the brown bowler, his cane still draped gracefully over one arm. As he paddled toward us, his mouth fell open. Inside was a small fortune in gold fillings.
What are they doing to you, my delicate Lily?
Ahmed, please leave at once. I do not need your help.
But, my Lily, I'm here to protect you. These men, they are making a fool of you. Do not believe
Get me. Out of here, Pasha. This is out of your range.
Please, Lily, my blossom, I beg you to see reason. These men, they only mean to do you harm. The lights! Where are the lights? Help!
The room was a pool of black ink. I dived for the spot where Sloan had stood with the gun. I felt hot air on my neck and turned. The carpet came up and made a fuzzy pillow for my cheek as everything folded into a nightmare of spinning rooms. And somewhere off in the distance, I heard the toll of wedding bells.
Tonight's story continues in just a moment. We're sure you listeners, many of whom have written letters to CBS, are happy to know that Rocky Jordan is back on the air. Yes, Rocky Jordan joins one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember, this half hour, each Sunday evening, will be the time for Rocky Jordan. Now, back to tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
It was still the office of Lily Karoff. I opened my eyes into a stream of water cascading down my nose. It was coming from a big white pitcher. Holding the pitcher was Sam Sabaya, Captain, Cairo Police.
Well, Jordan. You know, Jordan, on you, this carpet looks very good.
I wish I could say the same thing for my head.
What happened, Sam?
Nothing unusual for you, Jordan. Only murder. Look, beside you.
Lily.
Miss Lily Karoff, quite dead.
Like a model for a detective magazine cover.
Only she is not posing, Jordan.
Okay, Sam. Am I booked?
Not yet, Jordan. Not yet.
The dialogue wasn't exactly sparkling on the way to the Cairo jail. Sam confined himself to a few official grunts, and I sat back and watched traffic. In 10 minutes, we pulled up to a sand-colored building, and Sabaya and I got out. I followed Sam to a small back room. He closed the door and pulled up a couple of chairs.
Coffee, Jordan?
Oh, I need more than coffee, Sam.
But we serve only coffee here.
Sorry.
Now, please tell me everything.
Beginning when?
The police received an anonymous phone call to come to the Club Fachad at once. I arrived to find the body of Lily Karoff shot to death. The gun that apparently killed her was in your hand.
Oh, you tell it much better, Sam. Go ahead, go ahead.
Never mind, Jordan. I'm waiting for your story.
All right, I'll make it brief. Lily came by my office this afternoon with the idea of marrying me. She said something about wanting to leave the country.
Leave the country?
Yes, she's a white Russian, Sam. Said certain friends of hers had been disappearing lately. Hey, underground stuff maybe, huh?
Yeah, underground, of course. Very likely.
Well, that's what the lady said, Sam.
The lady deceived you, Jordan. I will show you. Here we are. A complete report on any and all underground activities in Cairo in the past year. Look, not one case of unexplained disappearance, as you call it.
Well, Sam, a good job wouldn't leave a case history for the police.
Jordan, I'm afraid you have been taken in by this fantastic story.
Live and learn. Well, anyway, after Lily, my next caller was Timmy Rogers. He's a small-time gambler. He gave Lily the idea about marrying me.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Then a short, fat man in a brown bowler shows up. Lily's stage door Johnny. He tries to buy me out of the marriage.
Jordan, I'm trying very hard to believe you.
So then Mike Sloan, one of Lily's boys, shot up my place just so I wouldn't forget. It's my wedding day. All right, I went to Lily's to set everybody straight, and that's where you found me.
Jordan, what about this man in the brown bowler?
His name is Ahmed Pasha. We got anything on him, Sam?
Certainly, Jordan. Ahmed Pasha happens to be one of the richest men in Cairo.
Yeah, but...
And the most respected. He is a business broker of high reputation. He buys and sells business enterprises.
Like nightclubs?
And why not? Jordan, you are beginning to waste my time. It is not likely that you killed Lily and then struck yourself on the head. Therefore, I shall release you with the usual warning. Jordan, do not...
Oh, not again, Sam. I've heard that speech before. No, I'm not leaving Cairo. I like it here. I strolled out of Sam's office and onto the busy street. The neon signs were beginning to light up, which reminded me that the night crowd would be moving into the Cafe Tambourine. But there was one little matter that came before business. Murder. I was only a block away from the station when a small character stepped out of a darkened doorway.
Well, 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 Rock, old kid, I've been looking all over for you.
Why don't you try the other side of town?
Listen, Rock, I didn't know it would turn out this way. I just read the extra about Lily. Look, Rock, you gotta believe me. I ran out of Lily's place the minute the lights went out. I didn't know about it till later.
Sam Sabaya might like to hear that story.
Look, Rock, I saw something in that room. You know who turned out those lights? Sloan did it. I saw him.
It's not news, little man. But Mike Sloan has some answers, and that's the man I'm going
to
see.
But, Rock, he wouldn't be hanging around the facade. Maybe we ought to go back to your place and get a drink first, huh?
Hey, maybe you're right for once in your life. You give me an idea. Timmy Rogers and I headed back to the Cafe Tambourine. At every corner, Timmy looked four ways before crossing the street. It was exactly 7:30 when we walked in the front door. I worked my way through the crowded tables toward my office. Timmy Rogers hung on my coattail like a scared kid at a bargain counter. I opened the door. Just as the books were beginning to balance, I knew I had to throw them all out of the window. Sitting behind my desk was the man I was looking for, Mike Sloan. He was dead. Three holes neatly punctured the starched white shirt front of his tuxedo.
Rocky, is he dead?
Shut the door.
Rock, what's that?
It's a calling card. Sloan had it crumpled in his hand.
Gee, Rock, let me see.
Yeah, not so fast. Here.
What? There's nothing on it. Just a dirty orange spot.
Try turning it over, Timmy. Makes more sense that way.
Rock, it says Ahmed Pasha.
You guessed it. It's his calling card.
Then that means Ahmed Pasha left it there?
Well, not likely. Maybe Sloan was trying to tell us something.
You're right, Rocky. Sure. Ahmed Pasha was in love with Lily and she wouldn't have him. So when he couldn't stop the wedding, he killed her.
And Sloan saw him do it. It fits that way.
Yeah, maybe it does, Rocky. What are you going to do now?
Find Ahmed Pasha.
Oh, I don't know, Rocky. The Pasha didn't strike me as that kind of a guy. Maybe we're jumping to conclusions, Rocky, huh?
Maybe not.
Well, I don't know. That isn't much proof. Ahmed Pasha just doesn't look like the kind of person who would commit murder. Are you going to call Sabaya?
Yeah, later. There's one other call I'm going to make first.
Where's that, Rock?
The card says office number 17 Kadru Street.
Pretty late for calling at Pasha's office, isn't it, Rock?
Oh, just a hunch, that's all. Coming with me?
Yeah, well, okay, Rocky, I guess so.
We ducked out the alley door. Down the street, we hailed a taxi and gave him the Pasha's address. As we weaved through the night traffic, wheels in my head ticked along with a cab meter. Everything added up like a traveling salesman's expense account. It fit now. I wouldn't be throwing any more books out of the window. There was a light in the office front as the cab pulled over to the curb.
What is it, please?
I'm looking for Ahmed Pasha. Is he here?
It's rather late. No, no, he's not in.
You mind if we step inside?
Well, very well. You are also from the police?
Rocky, maybe we better get out.
No, not exactly, sweetheart. Ahmed Pasha left a calling card at my place. I'm returning the call.
Then you are not the police?
No. When were the police here?
A while ago. I don't remember. Please, Ahmed Pasha is not here. I cannot help you. I have not seen him all afternoon.
Oh, just calm down. We'll make this short.
Please don't ask me any more questions. It is time to close the office. I must go home.
One thing more. Any idea where we could find him?
Perhaps at his hotel. That is all I know.
Oh, yeah, the Parner.
No, no. The Hotel Shepherd. Room 614.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, that's it. Sorry to bother you. I watched the girl bolt the door behind us and pull the curtains. So Sam Sabaya had paid his respects to the Pasha after all. Didn't look like his luck was any better than mine. Timmy Rogers had something in his mind.
It's this way, Rock. The Pasha shows up in your cafe and I get shot at. Then he comes to the wedding and Lily gets killed. You know, Rock, I don't think I'm in a hurry to meet that Pasha again.
See what you mean.
Look, Rock, why not let Sabaya handle it? If you go up there to Ahmed Pasha's hotel, you don't know what might happen.
Timmy, I think you got something there. Maybe it would be a nice idea to have Sabaya along.
Sure thing, Rock. That's playing it smart.
Oh, come on, we're wasting time.
Not we, Rocky. If Sabaya is checking on Ahmed Pasha, I'm next. I don't want any part of that police station. The last time I dropped in to see Sabaya, I stayed 30 days.
All right, see you around, Timmy.
Yeah, sure, Rock. See you around.
I found the nearest phone booth and dialed police headquarters. Sabaya was gone for the night. My next stop was the Cafe Tambourine. Nothing had turned up. Mike Sloan was still sitting behind the locked door to my office, and I left him there. That made it complete. There was only one item left on my list. Hotel Shepherd, room 614. The lobby of the Shepherd was teeming with the tourist trade. I strolled over to the main desk and waited for a pith-helmeted Englishman to collect his mail. Then I moved in.
Rocky! Rocky Jordan, I say, it's good to see you again. Where you been?
Oh, usual places, Archie.
Oh, what's on your mind, Rocky?
Archie, you got a small favor.
Oh, Rocky, the last favor you asked of me almost cost me my position here.
Oh, sorry to hear it. This one's going to be easy.
Oh, yes? What is it?
I want the key to room 614.
Really? Oh, no. Oh, now, Rocky. Oh, there you go again.
Oh, this is important, Archie.
Oh, I can't do it, Rocky. Sorry, I'd really be discharged doing a trick like that. Besides, that's Ahmed Pasha's room. Don't you know that? Well, he's a permanent guest.
Look,
here.
Look, Archie, I said it was important.
Oh, well, I'd like to, Rocky, but you know...
Thanks, Archie. I knew you'd help me out. Archie's a real friend. He made like he didn't even know I'd slipped him the 10 spot when he handed me the key. Being in Shepherd's was like old home week. When the little numbers on the door said 614, I stopped. This was the end of the line. I put the key in the lock. I gave the doorknob a quick turn, kicked the door open, and dived for the floor inside. When the shooting stopped, I reached back with my foot and kicked the door closed. In the thick darkness, I started crawling for the spot the shots had come from. I figured he wouldn't move, but I was wrong. I met him halfway. He didn't have time to shoot again. Lights came on, and in the doorway stood Ahmed Pasha, all cane and white gloves, the brown bowler resting neatly on his round head.
Well, what is the meaning of this?
I don't have time for the shooting. Maybe you'd like to meet the man who murdered Lily Karoff. Take a look.
Why?
That's right. The little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky Jordan will be back in just a moment. Now a note for you listeners. Remember, Rocky Jordan has joined one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember this same time each Sunday night for Rocky Jordan. Now for the ending of tonight's story.
It was after midnight before Sam Sabaya and I could settle down back in my office at the Cafe Tambourine. They had taken Sloan's body away, and as usual, Sam wanted details.
Now, Jordan, about the Pasha's calling card.
I found Sloan dead with the card in his hand. It was Ahmed Pasha's, all right, but on the back there was an orange spot. The Pasha's too neat a guy to be passing out soiled calling cards. Besides, the color of the spot struck me. Where would you pick up an orange spot?
I haven't the slightest idea.
That's because you don't drink, Sam. Ever hear of a cocktail called an orange blossom? They're real fancy things, made with orange sherbet and gin.
What has this orange blossom to do with the calling card?
Timmy Rogers was drinking one this afternoon when my bar got shot up. He must have picked up Posh's card off the bar after the shooting. What he didn't notice was that a little of his own drink had spilled on it.
Then he deliberately left the card in Mike Sloan's hand after killing him.
Sure. Timmy had it all set for Ahmed Pasha. Till I made him think Pasha knew something. That's when he got scared. He waited for Pasha in his hotel room, and when I came in, well, you know the rest. He fired at a swinging door.
So Timmy killed Lily, and then Mike, because Mike had seen him do it.
Now, the whole scheme was simple, Sam. It was Timmy's idea to set up the phony White Russian scare. That was to get Lily out of town so he and Mike could take over a money-making nightclub. They were going to buy her out for almost nothing. And at the same time, Timmy could square the $5,000 he owed the club.
A good scheme it was, too, Jordan. Except that Timmy Rogers lost his head and killed Lily when Ahmed Pasha threatened to expose them. Ahmed Pasha must have loved Lily very much, Jordan.
Lily, his little flower, hmm?
Do not make fun of his love, Jordan. Love is a serious business.
Guess I wouldn't know, Sam. I guess I wouldn't know.
Rocky Jordan is presented from Columbia Square in Hollywood and stars Jack Moyles in the title role. Tonight's story was written by Gomer Kuhl and William Frug, produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music by Milton Charles. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. This was one of those episodes where I think there was a great setup and just a lot of intrigue, kind of this hard-boiled feel to the whole situation. To me, it was obvious at the end of the episode who had done it, just because only two people were left and one person was being implicated, which generally in mystery shows indicates that the other person did it. So not a terrible surprise, but a great delivery and a great way of getting there. The music is just absolutely superb. Really gives that whole Middle Eastern feel to the episode. Lots of bridges that give a sense of the excitement of the show. Now, in the program, it did mention this as being Rocky Jordan's return. And the reason for that is Rocky Jordan had been on the radio, generally just as a West Coast syndication, in a series called A Man Named Jordan. It actually began as a serialized drama in 1945, but was continued from 1945 to 47. It began in the midst of wartime, and the existing exemplars reflect that. Unfortunately, we don't have enough episodes of A Man Named Jordan, the serialized versions, to make up a full story. We have two episodes from scattered points in the program's run, so you can't really connect them together, and there are none of the half-hour episodes that survive. However, to give you a feel for what the A Man Named Jordan was like, let's go ahead and take a listen to this episode from February 28th, 1945. Again, we're not going to get a complete plot, but we'll get a feel for what this program was like. Let's take a listen.
In those places in this world where intrigue and danger go hand in hand, where death and disaster are the rewards of weakness, in such places will be found
A Man Named Jordan. In a narrow street off Istanbul's Grand Bazaar, not far from the Mosque Velid Sultan, stands the Café Tambourine, run by a man named Jordan. The Café Tambourine, clouded with the smoke of Oriental tobaccos, crowded with humanity, alive with the babble of many languages. Rocky Jordan's faithful man Friday has just told Rocky, Duke, and Tony of a discovery made by his nephew, who is in the employ of a Spaniard named Chavez. At the home of Chavez, many strange things have been happening. Many trunks, boxes, and crates have arrived. Many strange men and women with Spanish, Swedish, and Swiss names, but with the accents of Central Europe, pass through the home of Chavez. Ollie's nephew reports that the boxes which arrive, labeled merchandise, contain money, gold, precious stones, art objects, things of great value, which are hidden in the basement. Rocky, intrigued by the possibilities of profit in this information, shows interest in further investigation. His theory is that Mr. Chavez has established a station for escaping Nazi war criminals. When the others leave, Rocky drifts down into the café. And when he sees an old acquaintance, an international crook, rejoicing in the name of Triflis, he walks over to his table and says,
"Hello, Triflis. How's tricks?"
Rocky, my friend. Sit down, sit down.
Yeah, thanks. I haven't seen you for some time. Where you been?
Oh, I have been away. Making arrangements to enter a new business, Rocky. I'm now engaged in that business.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Anything legal enough to talk about?
Oh, Rocky. I'm afraid not. Uh-huh. But a fine occupation. Very remunerative and no risk.
Sounds good. Making any money?
Rocky, you wouldn't believe it. Such money I have never seen. I think perhaps you would be interested.
Sounds very possible. What's the deal?
It is not within the law, Rocky.
Go on.
It is an operation which helps many people, people who are in danger.
Sounds better all the time. How about a breakdown on it?
I cannot talk here, Rocky. Tomorrow, perhaps, in your office. I need a partner, Rocky.
Okay. Tomorrow at noon. Be there.
I shall be there, Rocky.
It's a deal. Well, so long, Triflis.
Till tomorrow, then.
Hey, what's that big smile on your kisser for, Rocky?
I just had a talk with Triflis. He wants me for a partner.
Huh? Triflis teaming up with you?
Yeah. We're going to talk it over tomorrow noon in my office. And if he's mixed up in the deal I think he is, he's going to be mighty useful, Duke. He's my pigeon.
Anything you can tell me about?
Guess I can tell you what I think. Oh, brother, I'm weary. Let's sit down over here and have a beer before we turn in, shall we?
Sounds good to me.
Oh, Hakim, draw two, will you?
Yes, Effendi.
Boss, you look tired enough to call it a day. Why don't you turn in?
I'm going to in just a few minutes. Just want to relax a little bit before I hit the pad.
You know, Duke, I
think our little chum Triflis is going to be a great help to us.
Yeah. Well, it's about time Triflis was helping somebody. There's one guy that makes me sorry I didn't stay home and practice my piano lessons instead of learning to fight.
Triflis is a necessary evil, Duke. If it wasn't for people like him figuring out strange ways of making a dishonest dollar, we wouldn't have much fun.
Yeah, maybe you're right, Rocky.
Sure, I love guys like Triflis. They think they're so clever that it's like shooting fish to outsmart them.
What's the angle, boss? What's Triflis cooking up now?
Well, I tell you, Duke, since Turkey has declared war on Germany, there's a lot of embarrassment in certain circles. Know what I mean?
Yeah. This ain't a neutral country no more. And they're going to round up all the crowds, huh?
Yeah, and the Japs. Now, the Japs are just plain out of luck because a Jap's a Jap. But the Heinies are in a little better shape if they can get their hands on a phony passport.
Ah, that what Triflis is up to?
Sounds like it to me. Yeah, it all adds up, Duke. The dope we've got in this house where Ollie's nephew works, the whole thing. Nobody expected Turkey to declare war. The Germans who can get out of Germany, the rankers in the Nazi party, they've been shipping their money and their valuables into Turkey for months, waiting for the day when they have to change their names and their nationalities to beat the war guilt trials and the confiscation of the piles of dough they've stolen from the little people in Germany. Great little group, Duke. Fine little gang.
Yeah. We're going to take a shot at getting them, huh, Rocky?
Can you think of any more pleasant work?
No. Sounds like a job that could be enjoyed.
You know, Duke, these guys we're fighting here in Istanbul, they're the real heels in this war. They're the guys that stood on balconies and shouted their lungs out, selling a lot of dummies on the fact that they were members of a master race. They're the guys that gave the orders to wipe out the population of towns like, Lidice in Czechoslovakia. The guys that robbed the churches and looted the towns in every country the Huns occupied.
Yeah, and now they're going to try to get away with it.
Yeah. Now, while Hitler chews the carpet and orders the soldiers and the square-headed civilians to die defending their homes and their fields, these big shots are taking a powder. They know they're whipped. They know they're slated for a blank wall and a firing squad. Well, some of them will get away with it, but we'll take care of a few, huh?
The next morning, Rocky Jordan awakens with a feeling that something unusual is going to happen to him this day. A premonition of something unfinished. As his mind clears, he remembers that Triflis will be at his office at noon. Triflis, the nondescript hanger-on who has suddenly blossomed into a man of wealth. As he is struggling with his shirt, trying to get his broken arm through the sleeve, the door to his quarters opens, and Ollie, his faithful servant, says...
What is the matter, Rocky? I heard such language.
I was just trying to get this thing...
Let me help you, Rocky. You are so impatient.
Great big boy like me having to be dressed.
Rocky, you cannot get that arm through your sleeve with the bandages on it. It's too big.
Yeah, we'll slip the sleeve then.
Yes, Rocky, I will.
Yeah, that does it.
Rocky, my nephew, the one I told you about, the one who's working as a houseboy for Senor Chavez.
Yeah?
He'll be here in an hour. You said you wanted to talk with him.
Yeah, that's right, I do.
He is most anxious to talk with you. I hope it is not too early, Rocky.
Yeah, look, hand me that brown knitted tie there, will you?
Yes, Rocky. Shall I tie it for you?
Yeah. My gosh, I didn't know how much I used that left arm of mine. Hadn't any idea what a handy thing it was. Your nephew run across any more dope that sounds interesting?
I think so. Get your chin up, Rocky. I cannot see what I'm doing.
Oh, sorry, old man.
My nephew reports that two more visitors have arrived at the home of Senor Chavez. They arrived at dawn.
Come on. That tie must be all right. Let's get out of here and have a talk with your smart relation.
Here's your coat. Rocky.
What?
Where's the sling? You must have that arm in a sling.
All right, Doctor. It's over there on the dresser.
Yes, here it is.
Thanks. I don't know what I'd do without you, Ellie. You've been more than a mother to me.
You're making fun of me, Rocky.
I don't know whether I am or not.
Hey, Rocky.
Oh, for the love of Mike. Come on in, Duke. I sure get a lot of privacy around this joint. What's the matter? Am I getting fat or something? You guys figure I'm getting too much sleep?
I just came up to see if you were awake, Rocky. What's he doing here?
Duke, I came to tell Rocky that my nephew would be here soon.
This joint is paved with good intentions. Oh, well. What's the occasion, Duke?
Well, I've been out around already this morning. I thought maybe you'd need some help getting into your duds with that broken arm.
Yeah. Ollie got me dressed all right. Where you been, Duke?
Over to the British Embassy. Talking to Major Pettigrew.
Oh, yeah? What'd he have to say?
Well, I just sort of asked him what was going on now that there's a war on.
Well, the people of Turkey are glad that we have finally declared war on the Axis. We have a fine army, one of the finest in the world.
I don't think that Turkey's planning on taking any very active part in the war. What did Pettigrew think, Duke?
He thinks the same as you.
Hey, Ollie. Mm-hmm. How about running downstairs and having the kitchen send up a little breakfast, huh?
Yes.
You had breakfast, Duke?
Yeah, I had one early, but I'm ready for another one.
I had mine. Shall I have two breakfasts sent up, Rocky?
Yeah, that's right. Bacon and eggs, over easy. And whatever else they have. But quick.
Right away, Rocky. As soon as I get that done, I shall go get my nephew and bring him here.
Okay, Ollie. See you later.
Reason I came back, boss. Pettigrew wants to see you.
He does? What about?
Something's cooking. Something that he thinks you can handle better than his outfit.
Well, did he give you any hints as to just what?
Well, I tell you, Rocky. While I was talking to him, I just casually mentioned the fact that you were pretty sure that there were a lot of krauts here in Istanbul, passing as neutrals.
Yeah? Maybe you talked too much.
I didn't tell him anything. I was just seeing if I could get him to talk enough to do us some good.
Yeah, what'd he say?
Well, he thinks you're right. In fact, he knows you're right. He wants to work with you.
Oh, that's just fine. What do I want to work with him for? What do we need him for?
Well, don't jump down my throat. I didn't crack anything to him. All I know is that he's got some dope on a few people that he's suspicious of, and he's willing to let you use the information. Go talk to him yourself.
Okay, I will. And look, Duke, I'll do the thinking for this outfit. Don't be getting 9'5" when you're 5'9". I'll make the contacts and the decisions.
Okay, so I got out of line. I'll get back in.
That's good. Unless Major Pettigrew or any other authority of any country knows about what we're doing the next few weeks, the better off we're going to be.
Okay. Nobody's hurt.
Come in.
Rocky, when I went downstairs, my nephew was there waiting for me.
Yeah?
Senor Chavez had sent him to town on an errand, and he came by here. Can you see him now?
Yeah, I suppose so.
He is very excited, Rocky. He says that he has news of the utmost importance for you.
These are exciting days in Istanbul and at the Café Tambourine. With Turkey in the war against the Axis nations, many things are happening. And Rocky Jordan is going to be interested in an exciting new venture. Don't miss tomorrow's dramatic episode of A Man Named Jordan. ¶¶ Man Named Jordan is written and directed by Ray Buffum and is presented every day, Monday through Friday, at this same time. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Andrea J. Graham, author of the Web Surfer series, oh, and A Madam's Wife. You're listening to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio.
Welcome back. Pretty intriguing program. I definitely wish that there were more episodes so we could really get a feel for what A Man Named Jordan was like and how these storylines played out. This is also why for many fans, this program is kind of reminiscent of Casablanca, because you do have this guy who, in many ways, tries to play both sides, but is ultimately on the side of the angels, and he's operating out of this very exotic location in the Middle East. And, of course, in this, in A Man Named Jordan, he was located out of Istanbul, while in Rocky Jordan, he's now out of Cairo. Now, of course, you could, if you wanted to string it together for continuity, you could say, well, they're two separate continuities. Although it's equally possible that after the war, having made some enemies who might still be around, Rocky decided it made sense to pull up stakes and to go ahead and relocate. It's also worth noting that the pre-war A Man Named Jordan was more actively working on various schemes in order to, you know, go ahead and get back at the Nazis for fun and profit, which is always an added benefit when you're fighting for justice. Well, I think the later Rocky Jordans, Rocky just really gets pulled into cases. He's not looking for trouble, and it's something that people can forget. You know, he is not actually a professional investigator. He is a cafe owner who just keeps getting into all of these weird scrapes and situations. But despite the differences, A Man Named Jordan is what made it possible for us to get the Rocky Jordan series we do have. All right, well, that's all for now. Join us back here tomorrow for Boston Blackie, and next Wednesday, another trip to the Cafe Tambourine with another episode of Rocky Jordan. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off. Coming up this week on the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon.
The echoing hoofbeats of the Ghost Rider should never end. They should throb in the pulses of every American and live in his memory from family to family, generation to generation. Perhaps ghosts should be seen and not heard. But this is one your whole family should hear about.
Listen to the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon, snackwagon.net, or wherever you get your podcasts.